All right, good afternoon. It's great to be here. So I'm Julia White, and I am General Manager of Office back in Redmond. And I'm excited to spend the next 75 minutes or so talking about, this is a little bit of a flashback of what happened in Office 365 over the past year. What we're going to talk about here is what you can expect in the coming year. And just to give you a rundown of what we're going to be talking about today, is we're going to start with a little bit, just touching on quickly some of the new user experiences. We got to spend a bunch of time in the keynote this morning to talk about that, so I'm just going to talk about a few other aspects. But mostly we're going to spend our time today talking about the kind of compliance, the security, the controls aspect of Office 365, and then also the development aspect. We think about Office 365 as a finished service, but really it's also a really powerful platform. So we're going to talk more about what's coming there and what we just released actually last week at our Build conference too. And then certainly last but not least, how do we get to Office 365 and some great changes we've made around deployment, getting the value out of Office 365 once you get there as well. All right, before I jump into Office 365 specifically, I want to actually start with some context of a question I get all the time. So we're going to start up front with this, which is, how do I think about what's going on in Office 365 versus what's going on with your servers, with Exchange and SharePoint and Skype for Business? So I just wanted to level set a little bit. So from an engineering perspective, we have one engineering team that does both. It runs the service in Office 365, but also ships the servers, SharePoint, Skype for Business, and Exchange. So it's a shared code base for the two. And we have effectively an annual planning cycle where we step back and say, what do we want to get done in the next 12 months? And as technology is ready, maybe some things take a couple months, we put them out in Office 365, some things take a year or more. When they're ready, they come out into the service. Last year, we had about 450 of those in the course of the year. And that's the promise of the cloud. You have the staying current, we kind of do the updates for you as we move forward. On the server side, we're actually not changing our cadence there at all from what we've historically done. We actually talked to a lot of customers and said, would you like the servers faster or slower? And general feedback was that about the three-year time really works. So that's what we're on now. So that's the SharePoint 2016, Exchange 2016, the Skype for Business server that just came out very, very recently. So that's the same cadence. And you can expect that to be. And I know there's been these rumors and conspiracy theories that we're not invested in the servers, that the servers are dead. I want to be very clear, we're very committed to our server products. They're super important to you, they're super important to us. We will support these servers, we'll continue to ship servers. So make no mistake, don't believe anything else you might hear, very committed. But I also want to be clear that what you get in Office 365 is not the same as what you'll get in the servers. For a couple key reasons. One, things are going to come to Office 365 sooner because as the innovation's available, we put it in the cloud. And we can do that because it's a cloud service. But then after, whatever, 2 or 2.5 years' time, we take what we have in Office 365 and we compile it down, and that's what becomes the server in that moment. So kind of like a catch-up moment from the server perspective. But there are things that we just can't do in an on-premises way. That we can do in the cloud, and we're absolutely going to take advantage of what we can do in the cloud. So things like the Office Graph. That's not something we can technically deploy and manage and support and update every day in a server instantiation. So you're not going to see the Office Graph, and therefore the apps like Delve and Email and Clutter come to the on-premises servers. Those will be unique to the cloud. So you'll see things sooner in Office 365, and in some cases, you'll just see things that are a little different. But we're deeply committed to both sides of things. So I just wanted to level set that in case you thought or believed otherwise on that front. All right, so with that, let's jump into Office 365 and where we're heading. So this morning, Gurdeep talked about millennials and the millennial workforce. And I like to think about this as like the instantiation of the work style that we believe we should all be moving to. And I won't belabor the point, because Gurdeep did a nice job this morning talking about the millennials. But I did want to give one example, which is one of my favorites, is we have Office 365, our education offering. And so we get to spend a lot of time with students, studying them, working with them, seeing what their work habits look like. And we were doing some research in a U.S. high school recently. I had the research team with me. And we were watching this young man pound away on his laptop. And one of the researchers leaned over and said, hey, do you ever save local? And the kid actually kind of sat there and looked back, and he said, what's that mean? And we're like, what? So we explained, so I put it on your hard drive, and he listened, and he stopped again, and he said, why would I do that? And I was like, that's a totally fair point. Why would you do that? Then you can't work on your phone, you can't get your stuff at home. But to me, it was just a little nugget of this, the you know, coming from a totally unencumbered view of how technology can and should work. And that's very much that work style. Now, thinking about it broader than just the kind of the changing of the workforce, the millennials becoming the primary workforce in a few years away, it's also about the way that organizations are structured. It's a really interesting perspective and in how we have to think about it from an IT management perspective. Of today, the organizations are pretty fixed. There tends to be mostly full-time employees, and people are staying at companies still at a reasonable tenure. But that's actually shifting pretty dramatically. And so by about 2020, 40% of the workforce is expected to be contingent staff and independent contractors. And the model is, hey, I have a business problem. I want to tap into the expertise across the globe, wherever they might be, bring them together, solve a business problem, and then disperse, what we call the Hollywood model. Kind of get the best talent, come together, and then go back again. So from an IT management perspective, you have to think about how do you have infrastructure that can support that kind of a fluid workforce, adding and removing people, getting them, and also have tools that work really seamlessly, whether you're a full-time employee or whether you're outside the organization, whether you're going to be here for a year or a week, and having the support around that as well. So an important aspect of the user's experience that we have to consider. The other aspect, from a context perspective, and again, touching back to, Rudeep talked about how we have from 4.4 zettabytes of information to 44 as you move forward, which is, a staggering amount of information. And this is happening while all of our human capacity remains exactly the same for the most part. And so this is where the technology has to close the gap. And as Gurdeep said, it goes from being able to just have user-friendly tools to having inherently intelligent tools. And that's really the shift. And actually, there's a great piece of research done at the University of London that actually studied the impact on humans of constant communications and emails and texting and Facebooking. And literally, what's the impact on our capacity? And if you watch people do that and then study them, they actually had them take the IQ test and they tested 10 points lower after having been in this constant frenzy of communication, which, by the way, is three times more than being high on marijuana and losing a night of sleep. So that's effectively the workforce we have in place right now because they're inundated. So we obviously have to get better on that front. So as we think about the investments in Office 365 from the user's experience, knowing kind of these meta themes and these changes that are coming, talk about the teams. We're very, very committed in the team. We haven't solved it. No one in the industry has solved fantastic tools for teams to come together in an agile way. So some of the things showed this morning, like Office 365 groups, essential to that. Fluid, dynamic groups that are open by default. People can find them. People can join them. Really essential. And then you can work however you want. I want email. I want IM. I want to do real time. But the group constructs hold that together. So as I go through my project or my business task, I can kind of have all of that in a cohesive way. Virtual meetings, video, first-class citizen. I love the fact that we're making every single meeting you schedule in Office 365 moving forward a default Skype for Business meeting. So the user doesn't have to add it. Your admin doesn't have to add it. It's just there. So when I set up a meeting, I can have a video there all the time. And I'm loving the day when we see everyone take the sticky notes off of their PC cameras and actually use them. And so we can see and have a really rich meeting experience because we're more and more in virtual meetings, not in actual in-person meetings. And the last aspect of this is getting the information you need, when you need it, where you need it. So that's about having your information accessible across all your devices, having the productivity apps you need to be productive across all of your devices, including your notes, like getting out of writing paper notes. We have OneNote. We can solve that, taking advantage of that capability on that front. And also, only having one version of things. I've been on a mission, for those of you who know me, we're going to get rid of email attachments. We don't need them. You can just share from the cloud, and everyone can have one version, getting to the place where we're working all like that. So the other aspect of dealing with the information capacity and getting out of that overload is the big investment there is the Office Graph. We've talked about that a little bit, but I want to make sure everyone really understands that because we're just in the beginning of this, and we're going to build more and more experiences on top of the Office Graph. So just a level set. The Office Graph essentially is this intelligence fabric that's running across all aspects of Office 365. It's indexing all the information, and it's creating inferences of what's happening. So it has signals of my content, of my actions. And that comes together to say, hey, I can tell what matters to whom, what connections, what interactions are happening. So with that intelligence fabric, we can build experiences, intelligent experiences on top of it. Clutter in email gets rid of my unimportant things out of my inbox. Delve We've been doing, you know, individual productivity experiences. This morning we showed you for the first time. We can now take that into more of an organizational view and show you interactions across the company. But these are just the first couple experiences. This is going to get much, much more robust. And I expect that you'll see all of our new experiences inherently be intelligent. Even Sway, the newest member of the Office family, has this intelligence built into it. So as I'm creating a Sway, as I'm working on it, it's actually bringing in relevant information, suggesting things that make my story better. So even at that level of the, you know, telling stories, enhancing it in that direction. All right, so I actually want to introduce Ben to give you a little bit more kind of the complement what we showed this morning around some of the user experiences, and then we'll jump into more of the controls and protection. So with that, welcome, Ben.
Just make sure that this comes on. This is when we find out we have video issues. Ah, there we go. That one. Okay, thank you, Julia. So what I wanted to do today was to spend a little bit of time going just a little bit more in depth on some of the things we saw this morning in the keynote from Julia. And I'm going to start, first of all, in Delve. Now, as we know, Delve is powered by the Office Graph and gives us this great insight into information in the organization that maybe we don't know is there or haven't been directly connected to, but it allows us to surface that up all through this great new interface. Now, we've seen Delve before, and Delve's been available for a while, but what I want to do is actually want to delve into a little bit deeper some of the other functionality in there. And so with the new groups in Delve, I have this ability to get a new lens and a new view over this information in the Office Graph that's coming back to me, a view that is based around a team of people I'm working with and a team I'm collaborating with. And as I go over into the group hub of Delve, I can see that I have all of this information about the team of people I'm working with. I can see who's live now, who's actually available and online. I can see notebooks that have been shared with our team together. I can see our OneDrive documents. And more importantly, I can see the conversations that are being had throughout my team on Yammer. And the great thing around this is that I can click here and directly link through to my Yammer environment and start to get access into the enterprise social network that sits within my organization. And as we think about this Hollywood model of bringing in the most talented people and being able to work together and then dispersing after we've solved a problem, a lot of those people sometimes don't exist within our organization at all. And so with the beauty of Yammer, I can now add new people or people outside my organization into messages and conversations I have within Yammer, all in a controlled fashion, ensuring that we're not having competitors coming in and those kind of things. And to do that, all I have to do is simply write my new message. So I'm going to say here, check out our launch plan. And as I go through and start to notify people, you can see this is going into my UX design group, but I can easily add in someone from outside my organization. So I'm going to go and put Joe at Litware in and hit enter. And what happens is it actually goes through and tells me that I'm adding someone external to my environment so that they can now see this message and join that conversation as well. Great way for me to be able to work with people outside, vendors, and people who are outside my organization and really start to build that network. Now, as we go through my conversation, we can also see I have a post here that's asking me to update the Sway we saw earlier today in the keynote as well. And so you can see here I have a link off to the collective Sway, and someone's asked me to put a new video in there. And so what I want to do is switch over to Sway and show you Sway running in the Office 365 environment. Here I have Sway. If I open up my app launcher, you can see this is Office 365. I have access to my mail and everything else there as well. And if I open up my Sway list, I've got my collective project Sway there. Now, Sway is this great canvas for creating these amazing online interactive environments where I can share information. But it has a very different authoring experience to anything I've seen before. I don't have a highly precise area where I put in information and get everything pixel perfect. I put a storyline together and I let Sway take care of the design for me. So here you can see, first of all, if I close my storyline, here is my Sway that we had from this morning. I've got all my information in there. I've got my video down there as well with Robert Downey Jr. giving a nice Iron Man 3D printed arm to a little boy. And what I want to do is I want to add a new video into this. So I open up my storyline, and I'll scroll to the bottom of this. And all I'm going to do is simply come down here and say, you know what, I want to put in a new video. And so by doing that, I put this new video placeholder in here. And then when I go to add my video, Sway actually starts suggesting content to me. It's looking at the content that's in my Sway, and it's starting to suggest videos that I might want to look at. Now, there's a specific video I want, so I'm going to open up my suggested list, and I'm going to take input from a different location. I'm specifically just going to say YouTube. And here I'm going to search for Blue Man Group Arm. And as I do that, a whole bunch of videos come back and I can see there's the video I want. So I select the first video here, add that into my sway, and you may see in the background, slight changes are happening. In real time, my sway is updating, I'm getting all of this feedback on where things are placed and what's going on. So I have my new video in my sway and it looks great, but you know what, it's the existing video is a little bit older, I want to maybe deprioritize that a little bit and bring my Blue Man Group video up. So I'm going to come back to my storyline, and by selecting my video, I can actually modify how prominent this video is. And so very easily I can go and say, you know what, I want to make that moderately prominent, and you'll notice in the background that's updating. And I'm actually going to go and shrink down my existing video as well. And this is all happening live. And so as I go through and do that, you'll see, there we go, I've updated my sway, it's now been changed and ready to go. The last thing I want to do here is actually want to put in some new ways of visualizing data as well. We have a great quote here that it costs roughly $40,000 to create a prosthetic arm for a child. And this program of the collective project is actually 3D printing arms for children from anywhere from $80 to $400. And I think I want to kind of represent that in a nicer way. So I'm going to open up my storyline again. I'm going to go and insert a new card. And I'm just going to go and insert a chart. Now you notice it's dumped it in the middle of the sway, so I'm going to go and relocate this to where I want that. So I simply drag that up and relocate that chart. And there we go, it's ready to go. So what I'm going to do here is actually go and put some data in, and I have this, saves me going and retyping. I'll go and put that data in, and then what I get is this great interactive chart where I can actually go through and start to compare different different bar charts and types as part of that, and have that nice interactive chart data in there. And I can go ahead and, you know, price, if I could type, I'd be dangerous. There we go. Go and update my title on that and have that nice interactive sway in there. So that's all done, ready to go, and I'm ready to go ahead and publish that. And I can publish this either internally to my organization or externally from this controlled source as well. Okay, so my sway is updated, and now it's time to get off the order data to my manufacturer so I can get these arms built. And so if I open this up, you'll notice Excel opens up, and I've got a list of people who've placed orders here, but I've also got something new that's popped up. I have a policy tip that's come up to me within Excel, and one of the new features we have in Office that's coming is the ability for us to have policy tips push out to all of the endpoint applications. We've had this in Outlook previously, and now with data being in Word documents, Excel documents, PowerPoint, we can also apply those standard policies you have within your organization out to these other document types, ensuring that certain data is not getting shared inadvertently. So you can see here I've got a policy tip. If I go ahead and click that, I go back to my backstage and I get a deeper description as to what that policy tip is. And we can see we've picked up credit card information in that. So I need to know that I need to clear that information out before I go and share that with my manufacturer. Okay, I've got my data set up. I've got that sent off. Now I want to go and do some analysis as well. And so I'm going to move over to Power BI. And I have a dashboard here that has all of our corporate data sitting behind it. And if I want to go and do some analysis, historically I'd go to a reports guy and I'd get them to go and build a report for me. But I don't have time for that. I just want to be able to ask questions of the data. And so with Power BI Q&A, I can simply do that. And I come in here and say, I want to see the total sales. I go ahead and hit enter. And what it's done is it's looking at the data that's stored within our Power BI, in our Power BI data set, and it's pulling back that information for me. Now, total sales is kind of useless, so I'm actually going to say total sales by category. And as I do that, Power BI is actually going, pulling that data back for me and rendering it in the best fashion for me as well. Now, that's not too bad, but I think I might go and change that and say total sales and country. And once again, the Power BI Q&A engine actually realizes that I have geographic data in there. And rather than giving me a bar chart with names in it, actually gives me a map that's all set up and ready to go for me to use. Now, I don't want to lose this, so I can go ahead and pin that to my dashboard for later. And then when I come back, you can see I've got that dashboard of data ready to go. So with that, I'd like to hand back to Julia.
All right, thanks, Ben. We'll go past that. All right, so now let's switch gears in terms of from the user experience, which is important, but also how do we manage that? How do we secure that? How do we protect that? Now, I think for, you know, decades, we've had technology where we can lock stuff down, where we can firewall it off and make sure it's inaccessible and deeply protected. But that always came at the cost of users being able to be productive, to get their job done. And in the past, people just wouldn't do it. They would be like, hey, I'm not going to get this meeting done. I'm not going to get this content out there. But now, with consumer services being so accessible, It's incredibly simple for employees to, not maliciously, but just in the interest of getting their job done, go work around that. So anyone with an iPhone in a pocket and a Dropbox account, it's pretty easy to share information. And so the idea that we can keep this tension of user experience and security lockdown, we just can't do that anymore. Actually, there's unintended consequences as more information is leaking outside of the organization with that approach. So we have a very strong point of view, particularly obviously coming from the office side of the house, that you can't disrupt the user experience. You absolutely have to have the controls, the policies, the management, but it can't be done in a way that disrupts the user. And that doesn't mean that you let users do what they want. You can't do all that. But a lot of it we've found is about bringing the user on the journey, letting them know what's happening, giving them that cue of, why can't I send that email? Oh, there's a better way, in the moment of that action. That's so, so important to get users to comply, because they're never going to read your policies and know all of the standards. You have to do that really on behalf of the user in that way. From an Office 365 perspective in this area, we also think about building it in, not bolting it on, when it comes to security and protection. We don't want lots of other things hanging around. We want it to just be part of it. We think Office 365 should be secure by default, and it comes with that. It was only really about 8 years ago when we first started getting into the kind of archiving and e-discovery space. And now, about 2 months ago, we bought one of the highest-end compliance companies on the planet out of Israel called Aquivio. It's actually the company that the big auditing firms use to go in and help the largest organizations in the world do e-discovery and auditing. And now that's just going to be part of Office 365. That's just going to be part of the service. So going from kind of being new in this area to going to the very, very nth degree of compliance, it's also where we're heading, of making it just part of that experience. And also doing it in a very holistic way. You shouldn't have to protect something different in email than you do with content, than you do with real time. We want one unified approach to this. So you can go to one place, do all of your data loss prevention settings. Go to one place, manage all of your policies. Go to one place to do your discoveries. So thinking about that very, very holistically. Now, if you break down the way we look at the compliance and security area, there are two aspects within Office 365. One is the controls we give you to set based on your company needs, and one of them, the other one, is how we run the service on your behalf. So let's go through each one of those a little bit. So first, in terms of the kind of capabilities we give you to determine how you want to manage information, what kind of security policies you need, it comes across those four layers that Brad touched on this morning in terms of identity, the file, the apps, and the device. So at the identity level, in Office 365, we have things like multi-factor authentication that we recently added. And people sometimes ask me on this topic, hey, since the Sony thing and other things, you know, what are people doing? Have you seen people's behavior change? What's happening? The thing that I've seen most since that moment is multi-factor auth turned on. So it's great we have it, and I've seen people use it more and more with that. But also, you can hook up to the Azure Active Directory, of course, and get extended capabilities from there. At the file level, we do a bunch around rights management encryption, again, just part of the service. Data loss prevention, similarly, taking that to be not just in email, but also across all the content in Office 365. From an apps perspective, the capability to do things like selective wipe, so you don't have to wipe the whole device, you can just get rid of business content, again, just part of it. And then again, you can extend that with our enterprise mobility suite, too, to do app management, too. And then from a device level, doing things like allow, block quarantines, you know, find out if it's jailbroken and kind of manage that from that perspective too. And then last but not least, from a compliance perspective, now having a unified compliance dashboard where you can have a holistic set of where you can set legal holds, do your discoveries. And those tools, we've tried to create those for people, like the attorneys and the HR, so you guys can get out of the business of having to be in the middle of that and just empower the experts to do it directly so you guys can do other things on that front. So that's from the customer perspective and the things you guys can set in the service. The other aspect is the things that we do on behalf in running the service for you. So the first layer is around encryption. And we've had certainly encryption at rest, encryption at transit. We've had encryption at the machine layer with BitLocker. And now we've gone to the next level, which is actually at the file level. So SharePoint, emails, all the content sitting in Office 365 now is encrypted down to the individual file level. Even in content, if you make an update to that content, that update change is actually encrypted separately as well. And then the data is, of course, striped across the data centers as well. So making sure we have all of those. And actually, that file level encryption is the foundation with which we can now take the next step, which I know many of you are interested in, which is bring your own key. And that's something we're working hard on and expect to happen in 2016. I know that's something that people have requested for a while. So excited about that. The next area is around transparency and making sure that as we're running the service for you, that you know what's happening, that you don't have to feel like, hey, I'm an arm's length away, I don't really know what's happening. So that means giving you full access to all of the logs, all of that capability. And we just a few weeks ago announced an API, which you can now take, and you can get all of that, that log information out. And we're working with some great partners who are building a single pane of glass to pull all of that information in across Office 365, but also other cloud services we know you're using. So you can have one place to see all of that, so you can see exactly what's happening with your data in Office 365. And the last area around access control, I think actually this might be some of the coolest stuff we're doing on this front. So when we run Office 365, we've kind of been systematically working out the times there were a Microsoft employee would actually have to come into contact with customer data. We'd like that to be zero. We're working hard to make it fewer and fewer and fewer moments. And there's a point where there's very rare moments where any Microsoft employee would have to interact with customer data. And in the case they have to, help support or other things that you need, we have, of course, different levels of authorization for that to happen. And what we just announced is that we'll actually introduce the ability for the customer, for you, to be part of that authorization. So we call it customer lockbox. So in the moment when a Microsoft employee has to interact with your data, you actually get the right to approve that or not. So you actually have control about when and how and whom gets access to your information, even though it's being run on your behalf out of our data centers. So it's the first time, really, in the industry, pretty proud about this work, that we're bringing the customers directly into the way that we run the service on behalf. No one else has done this in this way. We're going to keep pushing, and we're going to keep doing more here. I think if I look at the investments across Office 365, the security, the compliance, the management areas probably our single biggest. Very, very committed to this. We want to be the industry leader. We believe we are, and we're going to work very hard to stay on the front of that. So I'm going to have Jeremy come up and show what some of this looks like, as well as some of the very cool advanced threat protection capabilities that we just released as well. So, Jeremy.
Thank you. All right, so is there anyone in here that's an administrator of Office 365? How about Exchange? SharePoint? So quite a few people are actually looking at this service to see what they can do from a cloud perspective, especially in this new world of bring your own device in order to harden the security of the service. And a lot of the investments that you're going to see are going to be around protecting information, both in the cloud instantiations and workloads, as well as in the on-premises products. So what I'm showing here is the new the dashboard for Office 365, but I wanted to actually go to the new Compliance Center. So the Compliance Center itself, as Julia mentioned, really houses all of the different workloads that you think about from a compliance officer perspective. One of the new things that we're doing is really to take that pervasiveness of protection, that define the policy once, make sure that your files are protected wherever they're created, when they're stored inside the Office 365 service, even if they're not through email transport, because you might be aware of data loss prevention in email. We've had that for a while now. We had things like document fingerprinting over the years. But now in SharePoint and OneDrive, because a lot of files are being shared, a lot of collaboration is being done through those two mechanisms, now we have the ability to also prevent data loss through SharePoint and OneDrive for Business. Let me just show you what that looks like in terms of how you do that and administer that as an IT pro. So I've got a couple of rules here, and the nice thing is these rules are all templatized. It's very easy to set that once, and again, have that correspond with every user who's using that service, storing their files in OneDrive or SharePoint. I'm just going to go ahead and click into one and show you what the customization experience looks like. So here I'm applying my rules to SharePoint Online as well as OneDrive for Business. We still have the Exchange Online version of this as well for data loss prevention. And in the future, we'll be able to put all three of those workloads on the same UI so we can really define it once and have it apply to the entire end-to-end set of workloads with Office 365. So let's have a look at some of the rules that we have here in this case. So we have credit card limits that we're actually looking at within files to see if we detect different credit card information. I'm going to go ahead and look at what that rule looks like. And here we have some conditions. If I detect a credit card, if I detect one, that's the minimum count, or more than nine, that's the max count, we'll be able to see what's going on and take actions against that. In our case, we can actually lock down file permissions to just those who created or modified that file last. In addition, we can also send them notifications to the person who's using the file as well as the owner of the site so they can actually see what's been changed in that document. I can also use email notification, and I can customize those messages as well. And finally, if I want to let people actually just click through those, so say I'm just wanting to educate people about the policies but allow them to override. This gets really, this really works well in, say, mergers and acquisitions case or a place where you've got to work with partners. Maybe you want to allow external sharing of some privileged information. In those cases, you can actually let them override those different rules. So all of this is now working inside of SharePoint Online and OneDrive for Business. So I'm going to go ahead and cancel out of that and just show you what the user experience looks like once I'm in OneDrive, because I can actually see the files that have been protected. So you'll notice here that I've got some unique, different-looking icons here on my screen. I've got an indication of what files are protected on that site. If I click into one of them, I can click and see exactly what's going on. It's out of compliance. I can see why it's out of compliance. As Ben showed earlier in Excel, we can see even in the apps as we're authoring whether or not it's out of compliance. And I can click on the policy tip and see, in this case, we actually have items that are shared outside my organization, and they contain the credit card numbers that we were looking for through that rule. Now, if I wanted to, I could actually resolve that error, maybe delete the credit cards, remove that, or claim it's a false positive in some cases, but I'm going to close that down. Because we actually have additional things that we can do now from an auditing standpoint to get reports on all the different user activities that people are doing against those files inside of OneDrive for Business or inside of SharePoint. Now, in order to get back to that information, I'm going to go back to the Compliance Center and to my Reports tab. And we'll have a look at the Office 365 activity report. Now, the great thing with this is it's basically going to take a date range, and it's going to say all of the files in the entire tenant, all the files that people are working on, I want to see what files people have touched as an individual user. So let's say somebody's leaving the company, and I want to see that last week on the job. What did that person do before they left the company? That's always the big question, isn't it? I can actually query down to one user and do that. On the flip side, if I want to check at the file level, let's say I've got a file that actually leaked out of the organization, I want to see every single person that touched the file, I can do that as well. So all of these capabilities within the new auditing controls inside of Office 365 Admin Center, inside of the compliance area there. Now, the other great thing with this is we've also opened up APIs. So as a developer, I can even tie into these different reports and put them into the same common dashboard. Even if I'm using things like Dynamic CRM or third-party tools, I can use those APIs to actually track and audit any of the information against those files. So pretty powerful stuff in terms of what I can do there. But even beyond that, when we think about transparency in the service, and those are just some of the data, when we think about transparency in the service, we actually have done a lot in terms of really instrumenting how people are using Office 365. And this is something that's really exciting. So a lot of people ask, how are people actually using Office 365 in my company today? What are people actually working on? Are they getting away from attachments and emails and using OneDrive for Business? That kind of question. Now we can get all the different reporting through Office 365 reporting, and this is a brand new content pack that you probably haven't seen before that will be released later this summer, where you can actually use Power BI, the new preview version with the dashboarding capabilities that Ben showed, and I can drill into real usage data, and it's live, real-time information. So now if I click into my email client type, let's say I just want to see what the different engineering or finance or HR teams are using with mobile clients, it will automatically query that data because it's real live data, and as it changes and as it moves and more people are using the mobile clients, for example, that data will be reflected through this model. So very powerful stuff here in terms of brand new reporting capabilities in Office 365 reporting. Now that we've been talking about email, though, I know a lot of people are thinking about email and what we're doing there to actually advance the way that we work with email. So there's a lot of things going on the Exchange side. We're making it more performant, we're making search better, but we're doing a couple of things on the information protection side. And if I go back into the Exchange Admin Center, I'm going to talk about something that works on the on-premises world if you're using Exchange Online Protection, something called Advanced Threat Protection. So Advanced Threat Protection has two different flavors of things that we can actually look for and block. If you think about Exchange Online Protection today, what we're looking for are basically things like spam and malware, and we'll investigate and look at those different messages that are coming in. The thing about AV and the thing about anti-malware is that we need signature files. We need to know that it exists, write patterns, and know exactly what the behavior of those different files are. That doesn't always work for something like a zero-day attack. So what we can do now from a mail perspective is actually look at the attachments as they're coming in and do deep inspection. By deep inspection, I mean thousands of different calls made against those files in order to look for quite a few different things. So the way this works is we actually have in Office 365 our normal malware filters as well as our spam filters, junk mail filters, etc. Then we set up an isolated environment. This isolated environment is a sandbox. We sometimes call it a detonation chamber. This detonation chamber is looking for things that are bad in attachments, even though we don't have the signature file for that different malware that might be there. So again, things like executable, registry calls, all these different normal culprits. But think it's actually running tens of thousands of different checks against that file. This is a 5 to 10 minute process often that is looking at those files and really deeply inspecting those to see if there's any malware contained in those files. So once I've got all of that set up, I'll show you what the user experience looks like I'll show you what the admin experience looks like to get the policy created. So the policy creation is actually fairly easy. I basically need to turn it on. I've got to tell whether or not I want to block messages. I want to let the mail through, but maybe not the attachment. I want to monitor. Maybe I want to monitor it from the background and not actually enable the rules. Then I can actually send mails, in my case it's back to me, as the admin to see what's going on with that if I want to actually debug or run that different attachment through a bunch of tests myself and see what's going on with it, because it might actually be safe. But all of these different things that I can do now in terms of being able to tell what's going on in that mail and those attachments. Once that's turned on, what I can do is actually show you what the messages look like coming into my inbox as the administrator. So in my case, Ben actually sent a mail earlier, and that mail went to Julia, or at least he thought it did, and he had a couple of attachments there. You can see that these two attachments were detected as having suspicious content in them via Advanced Threat Protection Safe Attachments. This basically blocked that mail from going to Julia, and it prevented that malware from actually running either on Julia's machine or in the Exchange environment. So that way we're thwarting zero-day attacks in that sense. But even better than that, the most common way that malware is coming in, the most common attack types, the most common attack vector that we're seeing is through the browser, right? So things like phishing attacks, trying to get my credentials to get me to sign in somewhere or to get me to load malware from a browser, all of these things that are very, very common today. Now I can also do something called safe links inside of Advanced Threat Protection in Exchange. And this safe links will allow me to block any suspicious links. What a lot of malware authors do, and a lot of people that are sending unsafe links are doing, is they'll basically have forwarding links. They'll forward it to a safe and a good site. Then later, they will change that forwarding link. So we'll, on our side, on the Microsoft side, we'll be detecting all the IP addresses of normal culprits of people that are doing bad things. We'll see that, and we'll basically block mail by default. But even these types of links that come in where the forwarding address gets changed later, after it's already in the inbox, we'll be able to detect that as well, because what Exchange is doing is actually putting in another forwarding link of its own, and we're able to manage what's going on behind it. The way that gets delivered, in my case, I actually had Julia send me a mail earlier, and she said, while I'm in Chicago, I have to check out some of these gadget and sci-fi things that she's found in Chicago, because she knows that I'm a gadget and sci-fi guy. So I click on this link, and you'll see that Exchange, again, has redirected that link. It's seen that it's going to have spam in it, spamlink.contoso.com. It's protected me from going to that site. So once I close that page, it looks like I've blocked the links in that mail, but it's smarter than that because it knows actually what the good links are as well. So if I click on the Bing link, I'll be able to get to the Bing site. So pretty cool in terms of being able to prevent from phishing attacks or other malicious content coming in via the browser. Very, very powerful stuff. Now, beyond all of these things that we have from a management of OneDrive for Business or mail perspective, we can also manage devices now natively with Office 365. Let me go back to my message or my admin center again. And I'm just going to go into my mobile devices tab. This is going to enumerate all the different mobile devices that I've got managed in my environment. Now you can see here that I've got my device, a device from Julie, et cetera, there, ready to go. You can see all the information on them, and it kind of looks like Exchange Active Sync, but we've added more controls to it. First and foremost, now you don't have to come in through mail. If I want to attach to files, if I want to actually get things through PowerPoint on my mobile phone, Excel, Word, all of those will come in through OneDrive. OneDrive itself will be able to enroll the device from a mobile device management perspective. That means it doesn't require me to have Exchange Active Sync connected to it, which is really powerful because I might not use all of those components on my mobile device. Now, the other thing that's really powerful here, and Julia touched on earlier, is the ability to selectively wipe the device. Anybody in the room own their own device? So pretty much most of the hands are up if you're watching from home. A lot of people own their own device. What happens if we actually reset that device to a factory state? In some countries, I think that's illegal, right? I mean, it's something that you don't want to have happen. If you've got pictures that might not have backed up to the cloud or any of those things, you'll lose them. So I've actually got a mobile device here. Let me just switch to that. People probably recognize what that device is. There we go. So this device has some photos in it. My niece and nephew and my brother and his dog, all that stuff, I don't want to have that lost. I know I'm backing up to the cloud, but not everybody knows where their photos are going once they back up to the cloud, right? But all the other stuff that's personalized on the device, my apps, et cetera, even if I have to wipe that entire device and rebuild, it's going to be painful for that user. And a lot of times they really, really don't like that. We want to be able to just control the data that we put on that as an organization. So you'll see that I've got OneDrive here managed by the company. I've got my personal as well as my corporate OneDrive account. Now I'm going to flip back over into my management console and just show you what I would do in order to wipe that device. I'm going to make sure I select the one I want to wipe first, which is mine. I accidentally wiped a Sauce the other day. And I'm going to selectively wipe my own iPhone. All right, so what's that going to mean? So let's go back, let's wipe that. And this just takes a little bit of time, so we're going to go back to my device. I've selectively wiped it. Now what that's doing is actually communicating that information out over the cloud. It's talking to my device, and it's going to say, this device needs to be wiped, and it needs to not have connectivity back to Contoso. At least that's what we're hoping with the Wi-Fi network, the way it's working. So we'll see here in a second that this will come up and wipe the device. Now, while that actually communicates down to the device, let me just talk about the ways that you'd be able to enroll the device. So at the core, we're actually using components from Intune. So Intune is actually part of that enrollment process for the device to actually connect to data. Once it enrolls through, again, that's why we're able to get in through the different apps. That's how we're able to reset apps as well and wipe the cache within the applications. Let me issue that wipe one more time just for safety's sake. It might be a Wi-Fi thing as opposed to... Okay. We'll come back to that in a second because I have one more piece of information. Once I actually see the wipe indication on the screen, I'll come back to it. One more thing I want to share before we go back to that screen is something else that we've been doing around Office 365 Pro Plus. So Office 365 Pro Plus, anybody using that today? All right, so we really revolutionized the way that we deliver software, and a lot of things that we've been using with Office 365 Pro Plus called Click to Run changed the way that we actually deploy the software, the way that it works. We've also changed a lot of the feature set in the last couple of years based on your feedback. But one of the things that a lot of people have been asking for a long, long time is the ability to defer feature updates and be able to take security-only updates for an amount of time. So, if you think about the current model today, you take all feature and security updates. Now, what happens is, if you wanted to, say, defer an update because you don't have time to test it in time, or you want to make sure you have enough testing around that new application update, you couldn't do that. It was basically feature plus security in the one layer. But in the future, very soon, we'll be able to split the branches to where you've got 3 different branches in a year, so you can defer updates for up to 4 months. This way, you can take security updates only and not have to take the featured updates until that 4th or 5th month when they're due. That gives you the ability to defer the software updates for Click to Run. Let me go back to my phone here. So I don't think this wipe call is going to come back down to the phone, but we'll give it one last We'll give it one last try. There we go. I can see it on my screen, but you can't see it on yours. Now when we wipe, it was actually there. Now we see we've only got the one. There we go. It did work. This took a little bit longer than I thought it would. But with that, we've been doing all of these things around your feedback as IT admins, and I'm going to hand it back to Julia to talk about even more updates that we have coming. Thank you very much. It was going to work.
Oh, apparently, I need to get my team to stop sending around malware, too. So, all right. So the one place I want to send you to also is the Office 365 Trust Center. And that's the one resource for you to find out about all of the security, the privacy, the compliance capabilities in Office 365. And our goal with this website is to be as transparent as humanly possible about how we run the service, about the controls you have in the service as well. So great resource. If you haven't checked it out, please do so on that front. But of course, trust, you can't you know, just ask for trust. Trust is earned. So I actually want to roll now a video of a company, a customer of ours, Underwriters Laboratory. And it's a great story because for, you know, almost 100 years now, people have been trusting UL with their IP to do their safety testing. And now with their move to Office 365, they're trusting us with that. So I'm just going to take a look at that video.
UL is pervasive. Over 125 particular products in your house have got a UL label. I've been tested by UL. The mark indicates one very important thing. The product has been rigorously tested and certified for safety. UL has been on a journey. The journey is to proactively engage with our customers so we collaborate, and we collaborate on a scale that's unprecedented.
As the pace of technology continues to accelerate, we need to be in pace with that rate of innovation. Office 365 has enabled us to keep pace by providing us highly scalable, highly secure platforms to bring safe products to the market faster. To our customers, we hold their intellectual property, their trade secrets. We maintain the integrity of that information, and we make it available only to those people who have a right to see it. Office 365 just completely revolutionized the way we collaborate worldwide with our colleagues and with our customers.
UL is the proud steward of a 120-year-old circle of trust. Companies have trusted UL, and now UL trusts Microsoft to help create a future that is just as secure, connected, collaborative, and innovative as the first 120 years.
Now let's switch gears for just a second. So we talk about Office 365 and the great user's experience and the admin controls, but it's also one of our most rich platforms from which you can build on top of and extend from. And we talked a lot last week at our Build Our Developers conference about this. Just wanted to talk about a little bit of what's possible from an organizational setting as well, but even also from any professional developers here too. So first is around extending those Office experiences. And that means like building add-ins into the apps, but also around SharePoint and Exchange too. And so you can just kind of build experiences in where people are already doing their work. Now, adding workflow into Outlook, a very, very common experience on that front. And also, and running them everywhere, so building it once, being able to run it in the desktop, being able to run it online, being able to run it even on the cross-plat, which you'll see shortly, which is great, a new capability that's just come. But also, beyond just extending and building these add-ins in, it's also about tapping into the information sitting in Office 365 to enhance your own applications. And there's a lot of information sitting in Office 365 to be able to tap into and enhance things, like your line of business applications, and bring that forward to make suggestions. We launched last week extending the Office Graph. So now there's an API to tap into the Office Graph, so you can extend and use that intelligence to enhance your apps as well. And the last area is about being open around how we do this. So this means being able to extend and connect Office 365 using whatever language you want to use, whatever platform you want to use. We have great SDKs for Android, for iOS, for .NET, and more. And then also, however you want to build it. So we're ready to, we want you just to be able to support this in whatever way you want to come and work with Office 365. And just some examples to make it real in terms of some of the partners we've been working with. So Salesforce and SAP and Uber all built add-ins into Outlook. For example, I schedule a meeting, and before it, the meeting, I can actually get a prompt from my Uber app saying, hey, do you need a ride to the next meeting? And very helpful in the moment. Or as I can bring in new customer information, maybe going on with a sales deal with Salesforce, again, bring that right into my calendar information or my inbox information as well. And then connecting. So Do can actually tap into the calendar API to suggest, you know, better meetings and how to use your meeting time more effectively. And even Smartsheet tapping into the graph in terms of suggesting different experiences you can use and different things related to a project that you're working on in Smartsheet. So I'm actually have Chris come out and show you some of the new capabilities, some fresh off from the Build conference and what's going on from an extensibility perspective across Office 365. All right, Chris.
All right, good afternoon, everyone. I think I feel a little out of place. I'm the only one not wearing a cool jacket, so hopefully I'll have to do a little better with demos instead. So what I'd like to do today is show you through a few of the great partner solutions that Julia brought up on the slide just before, such as SAP and Uber and so forth, just to show you some of the amazing things people are doing both inside Office to extend our experiences and then also connect to Office 365 through our APIs. Okay, so let me just log in here. 1 second. Okay. So the first thing I'm going to show you is part of a key tenet to our Office extensibility is making sure that the add-ins that you build can run everywhere Office does. And what we mean by that is that when you want to use Office on the desktop, you want your add-ins to run there. When you use Office online, you want them to run in the browser. And when you use Office on phones and tablets and so forth, we want you to be able to use them there as well. They need to go where you work. Okay, so if we can just flip to my demo machine here. I can do that, I think. Here we go. Wonderful. Okay. So first thing I'll show you here is in Excel. So this is Excel running on the desktop. And as you can see down the right-hand side here where it says SAP integration, this is a prototype add-in that we've been building with SAP. It connects to back-end data in SAP on-premises through the SAP gateway for Microsoft. And it lets you bring in data into Excel so you can work with it, you can chart it, you can manipulate it and report on it and so forth, all the kinds of things you'd expect to be able to do in Excel. It also lets you push that data back into Excel. So it brings the experience into the Excel application that people are nice and familiar with using. But that's Excel on the desktop. What about online? So if I flip here to IE, here's that same Excel add-in working in IE as well. Now the way we do this is by using HTML and JavaScript in these new extensibility experiences so that we can run them in the browser, so we can run them in the desktop, and so we can run them on phones and tablets. And this wasn't previously possible with our old extensibility framework. Now, if I flip to my iPad here, let me just quickly flip plugs. I want to show you the same thing running on the iPad as well. So if I flip to number 2, okay, so here's Excel on the iPad, and as you can see, the SAP add-in running down the right-hand side here. It's nice and touch-friendly. I can use my finger, obviously, to use that. I can select the product data here. I can even drill in and say, which fields do I want to bring in from SAP? And when I click the Connect button, I get a nice table of data being pulled from that SAP backend, makes it nice and easy to manipulate. I can come in here, I can jump in and do some data editing. Let me jump in and change this value to say 203, for example. And before I want to save, I want to have a quick check of the things that I've done to this data to make sure I'm comfortable with those changes going back up to the on-prem SAP system. Okay, so I can click Compare and Save here. And what this will do is, as you can see on the right-hand side, it's showing a diff of the changes I've made to the data in Excel before I save it back up to SAP online. That's an example of extending Excel. But if you're anything like me, you spend a whole lot of your day in Outlook. So let me flip to Outlook and show you some of the great solutions we have there as well. Okay, so here's Outlook running on my desktop. The first one I want to show you is a solution from Boomerang. Boomerang, a very popular partner from Silicon Valley. They help you schedule emails and help keep on top of the email of your email inbox. If your inbox is anything like mine, it's kind of like watching the Matrix stream past. And I find it really hard to stay on top of what's going on there. So Boomerang can help you do that. So what I'm going to do here is flip to an email I've got open here. And I've got the Boomerang demo add-in loaded. This will be shipping shortly. But what it lets you do is when you're composing an email, we call this a compose time add-in. When you're composing an email, it lets you set some settings in Boomerang, such as remind me in 2 days if there is no reply from this email. Right? Normally, now I have to flag my email for follow-up and then use some sort of foldering system to triage what to-do items I've got to remember to do, or copy-paste it into some other to-do app for follow-up later in a couple of days. But I can very simply come in here and say, just remind me in 2 days, or I can come in here and select however long I like that to be before it reminds me to get back to bug this person about replying to my mail. I can also do things like sending later. A nifty one that I like is suggesting times to meet. So this will look into your calendar. You can set some duration times here for the meeting. It'll pick some spots. And when you're ready, you can say insert into email, and you'll get a nice little image in here that you can expand out, and it'll show you your suggested meeting times, nice little image directly into email. So that's a nice example from Boomerang, great for composing emails and getting back to people. Another example I wanted to show you is the work that we're doing with Uber. So Uber, common ride-sharing service or ride service, I use them a lot. I got here from the airport. The Uber add-in will let you schedule a reminder for a ride so that for a particular meeting. So in this case here, I've got SharePoint on at the Virgin Hotel tonight at 7 o'clock. I'd like to order or I'd like to schedule a reminder for Uber. So I can simply come into my Uber add-in here and type my number. This is Jack Bauer's number, by the way, not mine. There we go. And I can set a ride reminder for 45 minutes. I can come in here and set it for however long I need to before I need to get to the event. And then on your phone, a little notification will pop up. Now, the interesting thing is it's not just a dumb reminder. When you swipe the reminder to ride, it'll pop up Uber, and it'll pre-populate where you are, obviously, based on your GPS coordinates and so forth. But more importantly, your destination. And it gets the destination from the location field that you set in the calendar appointment. So it's slightly smarter in connecting those two worlds together. OK. So that's Uber. Let me change gears a little bit and flip over to the browser here. Because when we talk about extensibility in Office, it's not just in the Office client applications, but it's also in Office 365 and other places as well. If you're familiar with Office 365, up in the top left here, you have the app launcher. And by default, you see a whole raft of really great first-party app experiences from Microsoft. But over on the right-hand side, you can see the My Apps button. And if you click on that, it'll open a tab or open a window where you get to see and configure what goes into your app launcher. So this is showing you all of your first-party applications from Microsoft, but also we've taken that concept to the next level and let third parties extend the app launcher by integrating with Azure Active Directory. Down the bottom here, you can see Do, DocuSign, and Smartsheet are just three examples of partner applications that I've signed into with my Office 365 credentials. That's registered the app in Azure AD, and now I've got that app available on Office 365 to pin to my app launcher. Thanks, audience, for participation. Got me. OK, so Do, let me pin that to the app launcher. Once I've pinned it to the app launcher, that's jumped up into the top left here. I can see the menu. I've got Do right there on the app launcher. Now, you can imagine a scenario where you do this for things like your intranet, other line of business systems, and partner applications as well. I'm not watching. And partner applications as well. So it gives users a really nice, seamless way to get access to the apps that they use every day. Now, one other thing this gives us is not just the ability to extend the user interface with things like add-ins in the Office client applications or apps on the app launcher here. But it also enables us to connect to Office 365 to take advantage of all of that rich data that Julia was talking about just before. So an example I'm going to show you here is of Do. Do are a great little startup, do.com. They help you run meetings better by helping you set agenda, outcomes, and tasks, and so forth, that happen in those meetings. It works cross boundaries out of your organization as well, so you can send a meeting to somebody else and then both participate on the agenda and the outcomes and the tasks and notes from those meetings and so forth. Now, Do added Office 365 integration into their application. They added authentication, which meant they integrated with Azure Active Directory, which meant they could pin their application to the app launcher. It also means that they can take advantage of single sign-on across from Office 365 right into Do.com without having to rekey credentials or go through some other authentication process. So when I click on Do, it's going to open that up. Now, what Do in the background is use the Office 365 APIs to call back in to get your calendar information out of Exchange and out of Outlook. So let me show you what that looks like. Here, there's a timeline view of your calendar, and you can dive into particular meetings on it and say, I want to prepare for this meeting. So in the background, what Do is doing is it's pulling that calendar information out. It's not just a one-way process, though. Once you've set an agenda and you set up a meeting using Do, it synchronously saves it back into Office 365 and keeps your calendar up to date. It also does things like put smart links in your calendar appointment so you can quickly get into Do with one click from your calendar. You can invite other people, and Do have a great list of additional feature enhancements. They're going to be adding around things like the Office Graph and Skype video integration and so forth going forward. So that's a little example of one partner application that's connecting to data in Office 365 using our APIs. If you were at Build last week or heard some of our announcements, we announced a new unified API endpoint. For developers in the audience, what this means is that it's a one-stop shop for where we'll be putting all of our APIs. You authenticate once, you can call Office 365 APIs, you can call Azure Active Directory APIs, and obviously more going forward as well. But we see that as the place where we will be putting all of our API efforts in going forward. So in summary, I'd say take two things away. One, think about productivity experiences that extend Office, not only just in the Office client applications, but also in Office 365 through the browser, on the iPad and so forth, whether that be in Office or in SharePoint or Exchange or all of the other services available. And when you're building line of business systems or having partners build systems for you, whether that be on the web or on a phone or a tablet or so forth, think about connectivity and what the Office 365 APIs can do for you in terms of being able to get access to that rich Office 365 data in calendar, files, mail, contacts, Office Graph, and so forth. Thank you very much.
Sorry, I'll switch my PowerPoint back. Great, thanks, Chris. Switch back here. All right, so from growth around Office 365 over the past year, just to kind of catch you up to where we are, from a year ago, we now have 80% of enterprises using some aspect of Office 365. So we've really kind of crossed the chasm in terms of mainstream adoption in large enterprises. And so I thought you guys might want to see what does that look like in terms of volume running in Office 365. It's some pretty impressive stats, so I grabbed my favorite, which is right now we have 4 trillion emails sitting within Office 365, and on average we have 180 million meetings scheduled and conducted within Office 365, and all of that accounts up to 470 petabytes of data and growing every minute sitting within Office 365 as well. So we really have kind of met that threshold in terms of people adopting and using it in really, really robust ways. You know, if I was talking to you 3 years ago, this would have been largely about, hey, people are moving their email, and that's where really the kind of the momentum had began. But now it's not. We see just as much use of OneDrive, of sites, of portals, of lots of other capabilities as well, too. So we're really seeing a more robust usage of Office 365 across our customer base. So from a year ago, too, one of the biggest changes we've made is that we kind of looked at Office 365 and the on-ramp and the deployment process, and we believed, you know what? The deployment should just be part of the service. Getting you there should be part of the value prop of Office 365. And we want to make sure everyone has a fantastic experience getting deployed to the cloud. So that's when we created our Fast Track program. And that essentially works hand in hand with you. We have onboarding engineers across the globe that work with you to get your email set up and migrated and get you on-ramped into Office 365 at no charge, just part of your service, part of what you should expect with you on that front. And then the conversation, I actually have more and more every day with people who are already on Office 365, and like, great, but how do I take advantage of all this stuff? You're getting me new capabilities, I want my users to know how to use it best. So now we have this Success Center, and these are really resources for you to use in your organizations about how to take advantage of the virtual meeting experience, how to run more productive organizations internally, so helping you take advantage of what's coming and what's in Office 365. We also heard a lot of feedback over the past year of like, hey, we want no surprises. You're innovating, it's great, we have new capabilities, but don't surprise me with things. And that's why we launched our public roadmap. So now you have a view into what's coming to Office 365, so you can plan ahead, you can have it. You can also sign up for our first release program, where you can actually get the capabilities early and advanced, so if you can test them on just even a subset of people within your organization and get a look at them before they get deployed to your entire tenant there. And last but not least, I know that the best resource for all of you is each other, and so that's why we created Office 365 Technical Network, which is a great use of Yammer, external site, and it's have over 50,000 members in it actively out there. So if you have questions about, hey, I'm in financial services and I want to know what it's like to go to Office 365, guess what? There's a bunch of people out there who've done it and can tell you exactly what that experience was like. All right, so last but not least, I think maybe one of my most favorite parts of Office 365 is that we can actually really listen to your feedback and take it in and act on it. And I remember my first decade or more kind of working with customers, and I go out and have great conversations, like, hey, if I just had this capability, it'd be great. And my old answer used to be, awesome, well, that's a really good idea. The next SharePoint server is coming in 2 years, and then it'll take you another 2 years to get it all deployed and running. So in 4 years, you're going to have that solution. It'll be awesome. Not very satisfying, but it was what we had. Now I can go have those conversations, and I can say, you know, that's a great idea. Let's go back, and I bet we can get that flighted in the next quarter, maybe in the next 6 months, but we can get it to you. And it's just delivered. It's just turned on. So it's a very, very different conversation. So it's very rewarding, too. So keep the feedback coming. We love it. We listen to that technical network a lot. We get great ideas from there. So as you have those suggestions, the feedback, what you need, come let us know. And that goes for even our security area, too. We had Scotiabank out of Canada actually come forward last year and say, we love Office 365, but you haven't met certain compliance requirements in Canada and certain regulations in financial services. We're like, all right, let's do this. So we worked over a course of a year to systematically go through that process and get those requirements met, and now they're able to go to Office 365. So we really are listening. We're here to partner with you. We know we're all on this journey together, so keep bringing that feedback. And the thing, the list up there is some examples of things that very much were prioritized and focused on based on feedback from all of you. So with that, I will leave you with a very cool video of Lotus Racing, who has moved to Office 365, and how they're using it to win more races, which I think is kind of cool. But with that, have a great week at Ignite. Hopefully see many of you out on the show floor and otherwise, so enjoy.